I'm Sarah Grosso. I'm a professor and researcher in the Media Communications Department at Webster University. And I'm here today to record this podcast, which is a follow-up of our Spotlight seminar that took place earlier this year in celebration of International Women's Day. And I'm joined by Anya Gass, who is a Girls Advocacy Alliance Officer for Plan International. And we're following up on a talk that Anya did earlier in the year at our Spotlight seminar on the topic of empowering girls through technology. Anya, thank you so much for joining me. Perhaps you'd like to start just by telling us a little bit about your role at Plan.
Thanks so much, Sarah. And it's a pleasure to be here and to record this podcast and speak about the work that Plan International is doing to promote girls' rights. Plan International is a non-governmental organization working in over 75 countries across the whole world to promote children's rights and equality for girls. Our office here in Geneva is an advocacy office, which means that we're working primarily with the UN, the United Nations, in the area of human rights and also humanitarian action to make sure that girls' rights are taken into account in global policy discussions. In my role, I specifically work on issues related to gender-based violence and economic empowerment of girls and young women through a global program called the Girls Advocacy Alliance.
Okay, and at the time for recording this is just after International Day of the Girl. Why is it so important for us to focus on girls' rights in particular at the moment?
This one is one that's close to my heart, obviously, through the work that we do. But, I mean, it's true that girls are probably the largest excluded group in the world. They, on the one hand, face discrimination because they are children and they're young. On the other hand, they face discrimination because of their gender. From even before they're born, girls face discrimination in the areas of education, health, work and family life. And this is even more so in the world's poorest countries. They face violence and early marriage, teenage pregnancy, female genital mutilation, exclusion from education, child labor, commercial sexual exploitation. The list tragically goes on and on and on. And the efforts to address the issues specifically facing girls, what we've found in any case as Plan International is that those efforts have stalled over the last years. If you look at international law this is specifically the area of work that we do here in Geneva, you see that at a time during the 90s and early 2000s, there was quite a lot of progress to push the girls' rights agenda forward. But today we're seeing that has slowed down and in some areas even gone backwards. Issues surrounding girls' rights have become highly politicized. For example, girls' sexual and reproductive health and rights, we know is a really controversial one these days. And what we also see is that girls are falling between the dominant agendas of women's rights and children's rights. They somehow get forgotten by both of these very powerful movements. These two camps are not really working together sufficiently to be able to make sure that girls' issues aren't forgotten.
Okay, so rather than being amplified, those concerns are being hidden all the more.
Yeah, that's
by
right.
By that cross-section. What do you see as the most urgent considerations at the moment concerning girls' rights?
It's a bit difficult to say which ones are most urgent because there are obviously so many important ones to address. Some of them I mentioned before. My specific area of work is around gender-based violence, so I can say a few words about that.
Yes, please.
What we see in our work is that there are really no safe spaces for girls. Whether it's in the home, in the street, at school, or at work, girls are at risk of violence, harassment, abuse, exploitation. Plan International has done a number of studies in recent years, including a few that have just come out in the last months, that look at girls' experiences of violence. And what they consistently tell us is that they simply don't feel safe in the spaces where they live and work and study. Just to give you a few statistics, almost one in four girls across the world has suffered sexual violence. Over 200 million girls have undergone female genital mutilation. Women and girls account for about 70% of human trafficking victims, with girls representing 2 out of 3 child victims. And 12 million girls marry before age 18 every year. But the positive side of this is that, you know, we've seen that the issue of violence against women and girls has really come to the spotlight with the Me Too movement in recent years. And thankfully, because specifically the issue of violence is one that is that there's a lot of silence around. There's a lot of shame and stigma and victim blaming for girls and women who've experienced violence. And it's high time that that silence is broken and that we begin speaking about it.
So after Me Too, the global spotlight's been placed on gender equality and women's rights in a new, far more intensified way. Earlier on in the year, actually, the UN Office for the High Commission of Human Rights described Me Too as a transformative moment, liberating and empowering for women. What do you think? Do you think that the global campaigns like Me Too have shaped the discussion around girls' rights?
Absolutely. And it's amazing, actually, to see how many times I've heard the term hashtag Me Too in UN debates. And this is really a good example of how, you know, what started as, you know, maybe just a social media campaign has really turned into something so much more. You would never think that something like this would make its way into the formal and highly political spaces of the United Nations, but it really has been transforming the conversations. What I've noticed is that countries that often can't agree on issues are starting to realize that A, violence against women and girls is something that affects each of their countries. That it really is a universal issue that unfortunately no country can say that they're free of. And B, regardless of our cultural, religious or political differences, ending violence is something that we can all stand behind. So this, I think this movement has had real unifying power and is certainly driving things forward.
Do you think that's contributed to more of a consensus and perhaps more policy making on those issues?
I don't know if I can say consensus quite yet. I think certainly a common recognition of the urgency of the issue. I think there's certainly consensus around the fact that, as I said, no one is free of this. Now, where there's not consensus is how to deal with it.
Right.
And of course, then issues, you know, related to sexual violence and how do you combat sexual violence? What are the root causes of sexual violence, for example? These are issues where there is not 100% agreement and where it starts to touch on issues that become a bit more contentious. But certainly, if we want to speak of consensus, there is something behind this movement that is bringing people together, bringing countries together, you know, behind a recognition that this is something that we need to address right now and together.
Within the context of those broader global campaigns, how is Plan using technology and social media campaigns to support girls' rights?
I think we can all agree that technology is a really powerful tool. It connects us, it provides a space for us to learn, but also to voice our own opinions. And, you know, we're really trying to harness that power. We recognize that technology isn't a prerequisite for empowering people, including girls, but we do recognize that it's really an important tool. So we are using technology in different areas of our work, trying to continually identify innovative solutions. I mean, a few examples, we use digital technologies to promote birth registration and make sure every child has his or her birth registered. We are using mobile technology to help girls and young women map areas in their city that are unsafe. And we've actually just come out with a study based on the data from mm-hmm. that mapping from different cities around the world. And we also, earlier this year, launched our Girls' Rights platform, which is an innovative tool that's specifically geared towards policymakers, you know, those who are developing international law. And this platform hosts what we call the Google of human rights, the world's most comprehensive, searchable human rights database, which today, as we speak, has more than 1,600 international policy documents, and it's continually being updated. It also has a training tool on different girls' rights issues, and a soon-to-be-launched UN debate tracker to hold states to account. All that being said, one thing that I think is important to recognize is that we recognize that there is a divide when it comes to technology and access to technology.
Yes.
Not only do people who live in more rural areas often lack access to the internet, but also to the devices that would connect them to the internet. But we also know that there's what we call a digital gender divide. We know that girls and young women are on average less likely than men to own mobile phones and use mobile data, use social media apps or SMS. There really is a stark divide when it comes to access to the internet, which of course limits girls and young women's ability to take advantage of the many innovations that internet and communications technologies provide. And so in our work, we are also taking steps to try to close that digital divide, to make sure that girls can access the internet and take advantage of what it has to offer.
Was the lack of access of technology that girls often have an inspiration behind your recent campaign on hashtag Girls Takeover?
The hashtag Girls Takeover campaign is something that we came up with a couple years ago and that we've been working to put in place since 2016, or that's been going on since 2016. I think that the idea behind the Girls Takeover is a recognition that girls are too often not visible in different spaces. And so whether it's private sector spaces, whether it's government spaces, girls themselves and also the issues that concern them are not visible in those areas.
In case some of our listeners aren't familiar with the campaign, perhaps you could tell us a bit about how it works. Which girls are taking over?
Girls from all over the world. These are girls that somehow are connected to Plan International and our programs, but we also connect with schools, we connect with youth clubs. Our idea is really to provide opportunities for girls for the space of a day to take over positions of power. And as I said, this can be in many different spaces. It can be government officials, it can be news outlets, the idea is to not only make girls visible, but also to help them see what they're capable of and help open up their horizons as to, the different places that they could be in the future, often in contexts where they've been told that they can't ever reach those spaces.
Changing the story.
Exactly.
And could you give us some examples maybe of... girls who were taking over for the day?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this year we have some pretty cool examples. Girls who took over the positions of the presidents of Peru and Paraguay. A girl who took over as prime minister of Timor-Leste. Girls who took over the positions of speaker and president of the national assemblies in Kenya and Guinea. A girl took over the position of the German Minister of Finance. A girl took over a BBC in her country, and also taking over Fortune 500 companies. So there's a broad range of experiences. Here in Geneva, we also did a hashtag Girls Takeover, where a 19-year-old girl named Sandy, who's a refugee from Iraq, who's currently living in Germany, she was able to take over one of the high-level positions of the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and it was a pretty amazing day for her. She was able to...
What did she do?
Chaired meetings. She was briefed on different refugee situations. She was asked to respond, asked for advice on different situations. She was also able to share what she felt was important from the perspective of a refugee girl. She particularly talked about the importance of education for refugee girls.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she was also able to share her thoughts on issues like sexual abuse and exploitation, on prevention of violence. So the opportunity was for her a really empowering one, to see that she was taken seriously, and that her voice was being heard during this day.
How did people react to hearing a different perspective, to hearing different issues coming to the table?
I think the reaction was certainly very positive. This particular UNHCR experience, we had a lot of comments on, what a great experience this was, also from staff at UNHCR, that this was, I think this was more than a one-off event. We really hope that, that this will also spark some thoughts within UNHCR, but also other UN agencies about the importance of involving young people in their decision making. We know that, we're all working on issues that have an impact on young people's lives. Are we really engaging them in, and asking them, what do you need? What are the issues that you're facing? And I think, we really hope that this is just the beginning of a conversation on how to more meaningfully engage young people and young women in particular in those processes and finding out what they believe is important and how they want to deal with issues.
So Anya, following on from that experience, I believe you've just launched a new campaign called #GirlsGetEqual. Could you tell us a little bit about the objectives for that campaign?
Yeah, that's something we're really excited about. It's our brand new campaign that just launched last week. As you said, it's called Girls Get Equal. And it's the process of many months of discussions and consultations with young people around the world. And the idea is really just to equip young people to become activists, to make change in their communities and their countries in favor of gender equality, mm-hmm. and especially to give a platform for young women to speak out against the issues that concern them.
Were young women involved in developing that campaign?
Yeah, they definitely were. We've worked with youth groups around the world, both ones that are connected to Plan International's work, and also other networks, other youth movements that are really doing amazing work for gender equality, for girls' rights, for the issues they care about. And we, through those discussions, we were able to boil down to a couple key calls to action, and what we've come up with out of those discussions with them is three things. First, we're working towards equal power, so that young women, girls and young women, can have equal power to make decisions about their own lives and to be involved in decisions that have an impact on their lives. Equal freedom, which is about making sure that girls and young women have equal freedom to live lives free of violence and to thrive and have their rights respected. And equal storytelling, which is about this idea, and this was something that came up really strongly in the consultations, that young women in particular don't feel represented in the stories that are being told about youth, about young women. Stories, we can talk about the media, journalism. They feel that the images that are being put out there don't represent them, and that many stereotypes are being perpetuated. And so they really want to be able to claim back the narrative, to have spaces where they can shape the narrative, they can shape the story that's being told about themselves.
How do you go about using a participatory approach to develop your communication campaigns?
I would say that we use a participatory approach beyond our communications work. Actually, we fundamental to the work that we do is the idea that children and young people know best what is happening in their lives. They know best which issues are they're facing. And we believe that it's their right to take part in discussions. There's a phrase that's often used, but I like it a lot. It says nothing about us without us. And it's this mm-hmm. idea that, you know, adults are doing all this policymaking work and, you know, putting in place programs and developing communications pieces that talk about or that deal with issues related to children and young people, but they're not in the process to develop it. And for us, it's really important that they have a voice in the process, that we're not talking about them without them. So this is something that we were particularly keen on doing in this campaign, because it is a youth-led social movement, is what we're calling it. But really, it goes much beyond that as a fundamental principle for all of our work.
It's interesting that you use this participatory approach. And it's interesting to think about the impact and the way it shapes the campaign in ways, in very different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's exciting is that, I mean, we're just at the beginning of a multiple year journey, and things will evolve. This is going to be a dynamic campaign because it's based on the voices of people who are experiencing issues on the ground every day. And so we will continue to listen to their voices. We will continue to involve them in the rollout of this campaign. And at the end of the day, they're driving it. So in a year's time, the world will look slightly different than what it does today. And the concerns that the young people raise will likely be different from what they've raised, you know, today in October 2018. But that's the beauty of it, and that's really what we're hoping to do, is have something that's responsive to, you know, to be able to listen to feedback, to be able to continue changing our approach, to be able to address in the best way possible the issues that are most urgent for young women around the world.
Anya, thank you so much for telling me about Plan's work. It really highlights the potential for social media and for technology to support girls' empowerment, and also how actually by starting with listening has a huge potential for using these participatory approaches and can really actually help to change awareness, to raise awareness before the campaign even officially begins.
Yeah.
Thank you also to listeners for joining us. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can find more podcasts from Webster Geneva at podcast.webster.ch. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah.